Yes, Eddie. I love Rocky Horror Picture Show. So Claudio comes out of the grave, and the girl is thrilled. Doesn't care that he's dead. Doesn't matter. Come on over. Whatever you want to do.
She's a ride or die.
Hey.
Horror Movie Survival Guide is a weekly podcast where I, Gorehound Julia Marchesi, delves into my horror movie notebook to corrupt another one of my longtime chums, Terry Gamble, who is hiding in the creepy horror closet.
My mission is to learn the gospel of horror movie survival and to incorporate Julia's wealth of wisdom to become a final girl disciple.
Join us as we take a deep dive into everything from OG horror
to newly released films,
but prefer the classics on VHS.
We'll talk about obscure details that no one else notices,
spin off into alternate casting universes, crush on some dodgy, foxy fellows
and creepy uncles, and arm ourselves with the knowledge necessary to become the final girl.
Ready, steady, go. Welcome to Horror Movie Survival Guide. I am Julia.
And I'm Terry. Welcome, everybody.
We are going to be talking this week about 1994's Cemetery Man, a.k.a. De la Morte. this movie's title, the title of this episode is He's Only Eating Me. And the tagline for this movie, Zombies, Guns, and Sex, Oh My.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that's accurate.
Yeah.
We start off right away kind of with, like, the sexiest of wet Rupert Everett. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yes. So, this movie was written by Giovanni Romoli, but based on the novel by Tiano Sclavi, directed by Michele Salvi. And I know, so, Tiziano Sclavi is very well known in Italy for his comic book series Dylan Dog, which we don't really get here, but I went to Italy when I was a teenager and I was entranced by Dylan Dog, and like there was like people wearing t-shirts everywhere and I was like, what the fuck is Dylan Dog? And it's this very popular comic book series, and it's about this kind of like, and Rupert Everett looks exactly like Dylan Dog, and I was like, oh, okay, I get it. Like, it's this whole, and I think maybe if we didn't have that translation here, I think maybe that, I don't know. I think if you know what that is, it makes a big difference. And I think maybe if I was Italian, it might feel different to me. It's a long tangent.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on the tangent. I was just like, I have never heard of that before. And I have no idea.
Yeah. Well, they made an American Dylan Dog movie with Brandon Routh, which apparently is terrible and was weird because nobody in America knows what Dylan Dog is, but they made it for American audiences. So why not please the Italian audience? I'm not really sure. But I do have some alternate universe casting for you here.
Yeah.
Instead of Rupert Everett, we could have had Matt Dillon, which I think would have been very interesting, especially in 1994, and a soundtrack by Tangerine Dream, which I would never say no to.
No, yes, that is all. Okay.
And let me say, my opinion of Rupert Everett is basically meh. Like, I had never, I had none. There was none. I won't even say meh. I had nothing.
What?
Because I don't even know. I can't even remember what I've seen him in. I was like, I don't know.
My best friend's wedding.
I've never seen that film, man.
What the? Oh, my God. Julia, okay. For a rom-com, I feel like it's one you might actually be able to get behind. Mm-hmm. It's iconic. No, don't grumble at me. I heard that in the back of your throat. I'm not going to stand for it. He's fucking iconic. It's brilliant. And it's one of the best, honestly, of rom-coms of the 90s.
Okay.
It is perfect. Because it's perfect.
Okay.
I know what to bring for movie night very shortly, and you're gonna watch it. That's gonna be the next movie. It's great.
But this movie made me get it, and I was like, oh, okay, Rupert Everett, I get it now. Like, super incredibly beautiful, and just kind of this very like classically handsome way, willing to be doing this kind of film, which I gave him so much credit for. It's like, right on, Rupert Everett.
Yeah, he will go and do anything. Like, that's his thing. Like, he's willing to go there, and he's funny and weird and charming and quirky, like, all at the same time in, like, the body of a Greek god, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So there he is. He answers the phone at the very beginning of this movie, and then he answers the door, and he shoots a guy dead in the head. And you're like, what? Very nonchalantly about life.
Yeah, like, super casual, in a towel, with a cigarette, just kind of whatever. Like, this is something he does all the time. And I was like, what a great character introduction. Says so mm-hmm. much and so little.
Mm-hmm. And you realize he lives at the cemetery. He is the man of the cemetery that I believe this title is all about. And he just says something like, life goes on, as people are dying around him.
So he just decides that he wants to kind of keep some of the people who have been dying and been buried in a cemetery are coming back to life, but he's just kind of killing them and quietly reburying them. He doesn't want to kind of make a fuss about it
because then, like, people maybe zombies in my town, maybe, but I can take care of it.
Because then, you know, he's going to lose his job and, like, think the police are going to come in. It's going to be a whole big hassle. So you just deal with it. And he's got his coworker friend, Nagi, who he hangs out with, who doesn't speak.
Poor little Nagi. So Nagi's a little more simple from what it seems like. I was a little – this is the only thing that kind of put me off in this movie was how this character was treated.
Mm-hmm.
Not the only thing, but one of the main things. But anyway –
so mm-hmm. they say instead of calling them zombies, they're called them returners.
Mm-hmm.
So the seventh night after they die, they come back. And so
within 7 days, so some of them come faster.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Della Morte seems like this kind of very jaded, doesn't really care about human, like, live people. All he really cares about dead people. But then sees the lady of his dreams.
A beautiful looking widow or a beautiful looking daughter who he's not sure of somebody who's just passed, but he is entranced. He's also not sure about the phenomenon of these people coming back either. I want to make sure that he isn't sure if it's around the world or if it's just in his graveyard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But he calls her the most beautiful living woman I have ever seen.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, you're checking out dead ladies a lot? Like, what's going on with that phrase?
He's lonely. He's a lonely man, you know. He's a lonely man. So I just want to mention that, like, the camera work in this movie is really beautiful and very fun, and really kind of makes this the movie that it is, with just kind of having so much fun with the camera work.
Oh, for sure. And it's like wispy gorgeousness, like the introduction of this beautiful woman too. It's like breezes happening. There's rustling, lots of rustling leaves in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And like her veil over her hat all of a sudden like catches wind in the most beautiful way, and like to have this reveal. So there's a lot of like kind of moments, I think, in this movie. And he comes up and he wants to talk to her, and she's like, oh, I'm so sorry about your father. And she's like, he was my husband.
Mm-hmm.
Because he sees the date of this man, and he was born in like 1934, and it's 1994-ish. She's a much younger lady who was with a much older husband.
But she does tell him what a great lover he was, just so he knows. And then have this scene where he's going to take her inside the ossuary, which is a word I actually had to look up, because, like, I don't know what that is. And it is like a catacomb, basically.
Yeah, it's a container or room in which the bones of the dead are kept.
So then they have a very creepy, sexy scene where she's like super, super turned on by this catacombs.
Yeah, and this is another day. This isn't the actual day of the funeral, just so you guys know. He didn't rush it. She's coming back again on another day to come. She brings flowers a lot. And on this particular day, like, he was digging another grave, and one of her flowers that she'd brought fresh for her husband's grave flew into the grave, and he crawls out of the grave and finds her, and that all of a sudden tells her about this. He also tells her that he's a biologist and tries to talk himself up like he's just hitting on her hard. And she gets really turned on by the fact that he's got this catacomb basically on the grounds.
Yeah, it takes a certain kind of lady that's going to be turned on for that. And that's the kind of lady that he needs to find, right? They're a perfect match.
Completely. They both have very particular views, I think, of life and death that mm-hmm. seem to match at this moment. So they're going at it, and they end up like going for it on top of the grave by the nighttime of her husband's grave. And there's these little like fire little things that look like, okay, I play a lot of Animal Crossing there's this little character called Wisps, and he, if you run into him in the middle of the night, he breaks apart and he looks exactly like these little things.
Oh.
And you have to go collect them and help him to bring him back together as like a ghost. But I was like, oh my God. This is like a phenomenon that's like older than I just thought they made it up for the game, but it looks like something that's maybe like an idea that's older than that. And I didn't know.
Yeah,
because
there's orbs are, you know, supposed to be things that people see, that, you know, these lighted orbs that are supposed to be spirits, or I guess swamp gas is supposed to look like that as well, which has always been mm-hmm. like the like 50s sci-fi magazine explanation for everything, which I don't think anybody's actually seen. But graveyard, weird graveyard lights. But and she's like, they're watching us. And I was like, comforting.
But she's like, I don't want them watching us right now. And he's like, the lady wants to be alone. And he sends the little like spirits away. And he's like, just the stars tonight. And like the reveal of this whole moment is so wild. Like the cinematography, like you said, Julia, is so fun with her like bun hair falling and the full moon being there. And she's got like a tear in her eye and there's red roses falling. And then they share a kiss and then there's a crow. There's like so much like crazy little imagery left and right of little like symbols of like life and death happening.
And so we do get some cemetery sex. We do get some boobs, which we're always very happy about. And everything is going just right until her dead husband comes back to life and bites her. Wah, wah, wah.
Yeah, like in the middle of them making out. And it's not great. And Nagi, he calls his friend Nagi to be like, hey, like, because usually he's like, bring the gun whenever their like spirits are coming back. But Nagi gets there a little too late, but ends up getting like a cross to like go through the husband's head. Anyway.
So she is now dying, we think. And she asks, though, nothing will separate us. Nothing, my love, nothing. Not even death. Not even death. Like, okay, love stronger than death. Here we go. Here we go. That's always
his name, Delamore, his mom's left the Delamore. So it's like life, love and death. Who knows what's stronger in him, in his line. So it's very literal in that respect, too.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, so a detective shows up thinking there's like a killer running loose.
Yes. So there's all these kind of characters who kind of come right here, who we find out that she had no friends and no relatives, which is kind of handy for his thing. So he's waiting for her. So he like puts
He lays her down in the ossuary, her favorite place, like with like a sheet over her. And he's like confessing to her because he thinks she's dead. Like, I'm sorry, I told you I was a biologist. I've actually never gone to high school. I've all this stuff. Then all of a sudden she sits up, you know, and he thinks that she's one of these zombies, but she actually doesn't look turnt. But he shoots her anyway, just as reflex, because all he ever does is shoot like zombies that pop up out of the grave.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it is good final boy instincts. But this is one of the instances where that perhaps instinct was not the correct instinct. And then we get to the scene, which this is one of the craziest scenes I've ever seen in a film, where I was just like, I don't even know what's happening. What is happening? So Nagi and Delamorte go out to lunch with some people.
This is because Nagi said, we'll go get ice cream if you help me bury this lady. He still doesn't even know her name yet, mind you. Like, he just hooked up with her over the grave. Like, they never shared names, really.
In the credits, she's just she. So.
Yeah, he even says it. He's like, I didn't even know her name. Like, maybe I should have found that out. Like, he literally didn't even find out this woman's name. He's like, had sex on top of her husband's grave with her and then killed her. She comes back to life, he thinks, and kills her again, basically. And then, like, ends up rewarding Nagi for helping bury her by taking him to ice cream in town. So this is what leads them to town. And they end up running into the mayor and his daughter, who Nagi is obsessed with.
Yes. So she's like, oh, he's very cute and trying to be nice to him. And Nagi's kind of giving her this weird look and like, what exactly is he doing? And Delamorte is like, get away from him. Like, step back a little bit, give him some room. And she doesn't. And so Nagi ends up yakking all over her. But the sequence of events is like, he yaks on her. She falls on the ground. Within seconds, a gentleman comes speeding into frame on a motorcycle. It's like, what happened? And she's like, he barfed on me. And she's like, oh, that's okay. Come on my bike. And then they speed off. And I was like,
Claudio.
What?
Yeah, it is so, this sequence is so weird. Everything from the mayor, like, talking about his reelection campaign in the middle of this, to, like, Nagi, like, freaking out and being in love and vomiting, to this, like, kid on the bike. So they ride off on the bike together. And Nagi is a little devastated because he feels so bad.
Oh, I know.
About picking on this beautiful girl that he's just like enamored with.
That's his like nervous reaction. Mm-hmm. But just the fact that someone would be like, oh, I just got barfed on, like, that's okay to come on this ride on my bike. And I'm like, okay, that's a very certain kind of person. I don't think I've ever met that kind of person, but that's okay. Because she should not have gotten on the back of their bike, however, because she, Claudio, and Valentina are very shortly killed in a bus accident. on
yeah,
that bike.
Big bus, because she's like, go faster, go faster. And of course, this is juxtaposed right after, like, Della Morton has this, like, conversation about how, you know, the young don't realize that it's over, how fast life goes. Mm-hmm. They all end up here sooner or later. He's talking about the graveyard, and we cut to the mayor's daughter, of course, riding too fast, Valentina and Claudia. And yeah, smoosh by a bus and a bunch of scouts. It's like a scouting trip. So it's like a bunch of Boy Scouts were on this bus. So all of a sudden, Delamorte has got a lot of work because he knows all these people are going to be popping back out of their graves real fast. So it's like a gaggle of scouts, a group of kids on their motorbikes, and this. So he tells Nagi, we're going to need a lot of bullets.
Yes. there's this girl who comes to the cemetery who is not was not Claudio's girlfriend, but Claudio swears that Claudio was in love with her. She wants to spend eternity with him, and has been crying over his grave forever. Even though Delamorte is like, please don't do that. You don't want to be here right now. This is a bad place to be. She doesn't care. And riding out of the grave on his motorcycle in all of his glory, Claudio comes back.
So amazing. This is a great zombie. I was very into this zombie. It's great because he pops out with the motorcycle, like, attached to him, basically, like how he died. And I can't believe they buried him together this way. It reminded me a little of, like, Rocky Horror. It's like Eddie coming back, like, on a mm-hmm. motorcycle or something.
It reminded me. There's a movie called Psychomania where there's some people who ride out of grave on motorcycles as well. So it's like, okay, this is good. This is good. I like movies with motorcycle grave. Yes, Eddie. I love Rocky Horror Picture Show. So Claudio comes out of the grave, and the girl is thrilled. Doesn't care that he's dead. Doesn't matter. Come on over. Whatever you want to do.
She's a ride or die. Oh.
Hey. And so when Delamorte comes over to save her, she shoos him away. He's only eating me. Mind your own business. I shall be eaten by whomever I please. Like, okay.
And then Delamorte also has this, like, philosophical thing talking about the living dead and the dying living. There's nothing that separates them. They're the same, mm-hmm. you know, and that's kind of what this couple is. But all of a sudden, he kills the girl in the midst of her getting eaten, quote unquote, kind of accidental kill, maybe. Oh, no. But now he's like, now they'll be together forever. So it's probably going to work out for her.
Yeah, be fine. So Valentina was buried in a glass coffin. So Nagi goes to work on digging her up because he's wanted to spend time with her, and I can't tell if he means to do this or not. I think it's an accident where he's trying to lift her out of the glass coffin, but just rips her head off instead.
Yeah, full on, like, accident. It's like a little, like, of Mice and Men, kind of like overly gentle, simple man.
but the fact that he doesn't take the rest of the body to, like, reattach it later. He's like, oh, I got the head. That's fine. That's fine.
That's all. He was obsessed with her sweet face and wanted to kiss her anyway. He was just like, remember, that's like where he leaned in. So maybe mm-hmm. that's all he wanted. He was like, this is good. Yeah, pulls her head off. And then this is, again, where the movie, I was like, what is happening? The head moves on its own, kind of like a Cousin It or something, you know, like, just it's like, okay, like across the grass, like uh-huh. follows Nagi, like, into his little lair.
Yeah, just followed him around, and seems fine with it. And, like, she's so pleasant, even as a dead person, is a dead, like, severed head, quite pleasant as a person. We also find that Delamorte has this, he likes to look down in Nagi's apartment, like, watch him all the time. So he's been
watching. They kind of watch each other, though. It's mm-hmm. they both use, like, their little peephole on each other's lives, because there's honestly not a lot else going on out there besides them killing zombies every night.
But our Delamorte's love, she comes back. She comes back from the graveyard and bites him really bad. Mm-hmm. And so Nagi kills her for the second time.
Yeah, with a spade in the head. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's when he realizes that she wasn't dead the first time, that he actually killed her.
Yeah, so Delamorte actually had killed this dream woman. And now I don't know if he's infected or he's worried now, too. So Nagi's, like, on watch, like, hey, like, maybe you're going to die or turn or something. So he's, like, sharpening spades and getting ready if he needs to.
But Delamorte wants to make he thinks that, because we thought that it was like a zombie thing, right? Like, you get bitten, then you turn. But now he's saying maybe that's not what the deal is. Maybe you get bitten, then you just get bitten like a human would get bitten, but you have to actually be dead to turn back again.
Right.
I also like the quirk that he enjoys reading the phone book. Like, that's what he likes to read.
It's the only thing he likes to read. He said he only read like two books in his life. And he's like, I didn't even finish one of them. And like one of them is some other random thing. And then it's the phone book. And he just loves to read the names. And he crosses out the names as he goes through them. I think he's also looking at the names of the people in the graveyard, too. It's very, very funny. Mm-hmm. And there's also this old woman who's been coming in and out throughout the film, too, who visits the graveyard. She's kind of like the regular visitor. And she calls him engineer, and he's like, I'm not an engineer. She's like, well, you're the one who engineers everything in this graveyard, right? That's it. And she asks him for help to pick out her tombstone photos. And she also calls Nagi cutie all the time, which I thought was really sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And De La Morte ends up seeing death manifest in front of him out of soot, who gives him the instructions, don't kill the dead, they're mine. If you don't want the dead coming back to life, why don't you just kill the living? Shoot them in the head. Like,
yep.
Okay.
Stop killing the dead. Shoot the living in the head. Yep. So, yeah.
But he's the of the kind of, I don't think that he was ever quite sane to begin with. And now it's to the level of, like, I don't know if he's actually seeing these things or if this is just hallucinations. Like, how far into madness is he?
Real life and waking life is definitely blurring right now because he talks about his only friend, which he keeps saying is Franco, this guy that he talks to on the phone. That's who he was talking to at the very beginning of the movie. Is this guy who works like in a government agency or something or building. And he just talks about how like, hey, you know, with Franco, like we could maybe see the rest of the world or not. Like maybe the rest of the world doesn't even exist. He really is having a hard time with reality.
Mm-hmm. So casual about killing these returners, and he has to drive into town because the motorcycle gang has come back, and now he has to kill all of them, and it all goes kind of terribly, like just like this shootout in the middle of a town where he's so casual about everything, like it means nothing.
Yeah, he kills 7 people, and we're not sure if they're even dead this time as he goes into city center. It looks like it's a dream, but he comes back home, and the detective the next day comes by to question him about where he was in the middle of the night. But the detective doesn't even want to give, like, De La Morte say it's him. He thinks it's Nagi who'd gone out to do it. And, like, De La Morte's like, wait, I thought I saw that with my eyes. What do you mean? But this is when the mayor also shows up as well and finds out he wants to come for political gain. Mm-hmm. To get a picture of himself with his dead daughter, because that's why he had the clear coffin for her, and wants to get a photo with her body. So awkward.
But especially after you've already buried her, like, shouldn't you have done that before she went in the grave? Like, you do want her to be sort of decomposed? Is that part of your plan? Because that's really terrible. He goes to the daughter's head's not there, of course, and they end up finding the daughter's head in Nagi's television set. Which De La Morte had shot out earlier and is now like his entertainment. They just talk to each other and they both seem quite happy with the arrangement.
Like super content. Like she wants to marry Nagi at this point.
Dad's like, no. Even in death with just a severed head, he also wants to rule who she can and cannot marry. So she ends up biting the fuck out of him.
Yeah, she bites her dad's neck and goes crazy. De La Morte actually kills Valentina this time and shoots her because she's biting the mayor's like neck.
And the mayor as well. And so now it just looks like it's what is going to happen now. Everything's kind of gone into chaos. And then we have the new mayor's assistant who turns around, who looks exactly like his love that we had met before, suspiciously. But she comes and they know they're in love immediately. And she knows that she finds out that they've mentioned in the film a couple of times that he's impotent, ?
Yeah.
But she says that she can only love an impotent man.
Because she's too afraid of making love. So, yeah.
Immediately is like, you know, will you marry me? And then goes to the doctor because he wants to get an operation so he will always be impotent. He will not no longer have it. He will, this is where the movie, I was like, wait, what is happening? Like, it's just kind of going slightly, like, veering off course.
This was when it went completely off the rails for me, quite honestly. I was like, what? Okay, so he goes to the doctor, basically, and, like, asks to, like, get, like, what's it called again when you're a eunuch? Yeah. Okay. So he wants to basically, he asks the doctor to get rid of his penis.
Castration,
Yeah, castration. Thank you. Castrati, thank you. Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah. And the doctor's like, he gets too nervous. He can't do it. He asks him to do it without anesthesia, which is just insane. He literally just met this woman again. And it's like, I thought he like got like hypnotized by her. I was like, is she back for revenge and hypnotizing him and making him think like this is going on? He wants it without anesthetic. So the doctor's like, hey, I can't actually do it. I just can't. But I will give you a shot and you're down below. That'll make you like, you know, have basically have problems for the next month. Like you won't be able to like perform. Yes. But it makes him sick. It makes Delamorte sick instead. And he's just like hovering between life and death and he's not feeling well.
Yeah, it all kind of goes strange from here. I feel like it was going on a pretty normal track. And I was like, okay, it's insane, but I get where it's going. And now I'm like, now I don't get where you're going. Where are you going, movie? You're going off in this crazy thing. And it's just that she like keeps leaving him and he keeps meeting her over and over. It seems all getting very like dreamlike and strange.
Yeah, and so now we have the old lady again, Pia. She actually dies, and so he's back at the graveyard, you know, doing his job again. And our dear friend comes up to him again, and she says the mayor who she's with, you know, assisting, actually has raped her. But now she's in love with him, and this is where I was like, 1994. Okay, falling in love with your attacker, because now she's actually realized partway through that she could actually enjoy herself. So I guess it went from like a rape to like kind of consensual through the midst of it, which was just like, this is not sounding great. And after he's like basically like had himself castrated chemically, he finds out this news. And then she says, I don't want to be with you anymore, even though I love you. I can only be with a man who can actually satisfy me now, and like leaves him. Mm. And so so Delamorte's like, wait, I literally went through all this to try to be with you because you came back and now you're gone again. So he gets drunk. He goes, ends up going to this bar. He hadn't really left the cemetery very much in most of the movie. It's been like the cemetery or this like one spot in the town square, but now he's at a completely different random bar and he meets these girls, Martha. And then this girl, Laura, shows up. And she looks strangely like the woman again.
Mm-hmm. So they have this great kind of like meet cute where she, you know, comes up and she says, make a wish. I grant wishes. And he says, I want you to fall in love with me. And she says, but I'm already in love with you. Haven't you noticed? I was like, oh, but like, I guess such an out of character thing to say for him to say like the one wish he would want is to want her to fall in love with him. I'm like, oh, that's very sweet. Even though you're really fucked up, I like that.
He's still been really lonely. Like, I think he thought he'd found his match with this woman, even though he never bothered to find out her actual name.
No, and they do have very hot sex, but then he finds out that she's a hooker,
and he needs to pay for that sex. And so
even has to pay extra for her telling him that she loved him.
Mm-hmm.
So he gets revenge by setting the house on fire.
And yeah. Well, the other girl, Marta's like, yeah, you got to go pay up. And then he goes upstairs and she's like, oh, I'm cold. And he puts a heater in the bed. So she like thinks she's getting warm by a heater. And then the heater like in a bed, space heater in a bed, it's going to go on fire. So it sets the whole place on fire.
And because this time he's really through with love. So then he finds out that Franco, the friend he's been talking to on the phone, is in a coma in the hospital,
and he's confessed and claims that he's killed these women along with his family. Mm-hmm. We find out, and the detective's like, yeah, someone's confessed all this crime, good thing we found the murderer. And he's like, wait. And Delamorte's like, those are my crimes, why is he stealing my murders? So he goes and confronts Franco in the hospital, and he ends up shooting a nun who comes to check in on him in the hospital. And then he ends up shooting a doctor, also comes in to check in on this, and then shoots a nurse too.
Yeah, he just goes on this kind of killing rampage. Spree. It's just like, but you know, but never no emotion kind of on his face. He says, we kill out of indifference and love, but never hate. And finally, so like after his big killing spree, he's like, okay, me, Nagi, you and me, we're out of here. We're going to see the rest of the world. Fuck this place. Let's go. So they end up driving to the edge of the world. Basically, we get this very kind of Truman Show moment. We're like, oh, rest of the world doesn't exist. They really are just in this little fantasy land.
Yeah, they go to this never-ending tunnel, and it's crazy because and Nagi, like, as they had stopped, had gotten his, like, head kind of bashed in by, like, the windshield or something. And it looks like he's about to die, and Delamorte almost shoots him, but realizes that this was his only friend, finally. Mm-hmm. He had been saying Franco was his friend, but he was like, oh, no, Nagi has been here all along, and he's been my real friend. And Nagi finds the gun as he comes to, because he's actually not dead, and he throws the gun into the abyss at the end of the world, basically, and asks to be taken home. And then we cut to, like, as actually at that moment, there's, like, snow starts coming down upon them. And we had a cut at the very beginning of the movie of a little snow globe getting shaken, and we cut back to you at this ending. We get the snow globe again, and we're wondering, was it all a dream in a snow globe? What was it?
Yes, what a crazy movie. So I had heard a lot about this movie because it's, you know, a big midnight movie. A lot of people tell me how fucked up it is. And there's a lot of, you know, and so I was prepared for a level of fuck up at this. And I was like, okay, I wasn't too, there's lots of gross stuff in it. Obviously there's lots of like necrophilic kind of tendency stuff going on, which I'm like, yeah, that's pretty fucked up. But I could take it. And I think it was fun until it kind of started to go in a weird direction. I was like, you kind of lost me in the third act, man. I don't really know what's happening.
Oh, yeah. It jumped the shark hard. I think once we got to the part two, I just was so turned off. Once we got to the part about the girl getting raped and then falling in love and then using that as a tool against him, I was just like, this is really fucked up. It's very dark for a movie that seems really funny and light kind of towards the beginning. I was like, oh, this is going to be a fun romp. And then I was like, oh, this is a crazy romp. Oh, this is a brutal romp.
Right.
It's kind of the levels there.
Yeah, I guess the chemical castration scene, I was like, I wasn't expecting this in this movie. Is this really what? Okay. Well, this is this movie. And I give, you know, it is done so stylistically beautifully, and the performances are amazing. And Rupert Everett is a delight in every single frame of this movie and has this character down like pat, so good. But it is a little, yeah. But we
so
did
thank you for all the recommendations, because this movie was recommended to us a lot, which is why we did it.
Yes, and we're happy because this is our lead up to Halloween, and that we feel like this is if you want to watch kind of a quirky, offbeat horror movie that a lot of people aren't watching, then this is a good one to give it a go. It's beautifully shot.
Yeah. So let's get into maybe do some ratings or something. Jules, what do you think?
Okay, you go first. We'll do us some gore factor.
All right, so we gonna get into some gore. One, not enough blood to fill a Dixie cup. Two, a puddle of blood. Three, enough blood to gross out the average viewer. Four, a bathtub of blood. And five, run for the barf bag. This is a full five. I think just from the necrophilia and the bashing in of heads and the double murders, because somebody's already dead and then you have to kill him again with like spades through the head, impaling by crucifixes, all kinds of stuff is happening in this movie. Full five. And also just for that castration scene alone, I think it's up there.
So for movie ratings, we have chainsaws. One, if you're desperate. Two, barely qualifies as a horror film. Three, seen worse, seen better. Four, not too shabby. And five, fantastagorical. And I give Cemetery Man a 3.5. Seen worse, seen better, and a little bit more. I liked it, but I was honestly expecting to like it more. And I was like, there was something that was just not quite right. Even though I give them AAA for effort, because that's always the thing that I'm most excited about. And I feel like the effort was 100% there.
Yeah, I give it a 3. I think it's mostly just because of the thing I just talked about a moment ago. And then also just the treatment of Nagi and the more simple character. I just felt, I don't know, it was hard. It was cringy for me to watch those interactions with him and how mean everybody was to him. It just made me really uncomfortable. But I did love Rupert Everett because I think he's a gorgeous god of a man. And I enjoyed watching him on screen. So I'm not mad about that. And getting to see that him and that hot lady on top of the grave was pretty, pretty hot. Ain't gonna lie.
Yeah, there's a lot of showing off of his body, which I ain't mad at.
both of them, and they are both beautiful people. So I was just like, that's cool. Like, I can enjoy this moment. But a lot of the other stuff around it was very problematic to me. But that's okay, because we love to watch everything and just see what it's about and get into it and talk about it and spark more conversation. I think sometimes watching stuff that's from different eras, too, just gives us different insight as to how far we've come and how far maybe we need to go as humans.
It's true. And we always do love your suggestions. So please keep them coming. You can find us on our Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. We do have a Patreon. If you want to subscribe, you get all sorts of cool behind the scenes stuff and newsletters stuff that the general public does not get. So we hope that this movie and this episode will get you in the mood for Halloween coming up. We hope you have a wonderful one. And to celebrate Day of the Dead, we are going to be doing Guillermo del Toro's first film, Cronos, which neither of us have seen. And we're both very excited to watch.
I'm pumped. Love him. Yeah. Can't wait to watch it. Super pumped, especially after talking with Daniel Krause just about a little bit more about Guillermo's like background and stuff too. I can't wait to get more into this as well. So
yes, it's going to be a perfect Day of the Dead episode. So we can't wait to share it with you. And thank you to all of you listeners. We're always so happy to hopefully put a little smile on your face.
A little joy for you. Thank you, everybody. Have a wonderful day.
See you next time. A happy Halloween.